Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me today. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes every Sunday by email. Get you ready for the week ahead. I'm excited about having Judge William Huss back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Judge Huss is a member of our Brain Trust and the only Superior Court judge on our Brain Trust, I have to say. He has that distinction. He's a retired Los Angeles County Superior Court judge and was part of the cadre of judges that was available to hear the O.J. Simpson case, but he was fortunate enough for him, I guess, maybe not to get that case, but unfortunate I think it would have been a different case if he'd caught that case. I think things would have been different. But anyway, he's here. He and his lovely wife, Dr. Marlene Coleman, are the authors of Working with Your Homeowners Association. He's got a new book coming out soon on how to start a professional practice. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. Judge Huss, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim. Thank you very much.
It's good to have you back. And by the way, as you know, Judge, the Supreme Court has a vacancy that they're in the process of filling, and maybe as many as two more over the next few months. And I just want you to know, I placed a call to George Bush, President Bush, and talked to him yesterday, and I've asked him to consider your name on the short list.
Well, thank you, Jim. I know you have a lot of influence.
Oh, yes, major influence.
I appreciate every bit.
Well, he already knew about you, and he said you were actually on the list, but because of my call, he's moving you up.
Well, good. Thank you, Jim. I need all the help I can get.
Now, you might be taking a little bit of a different position on the case. I did want to get your thoughts on this Kelo versus New London case, which is the case that shocked so many people, where the Supreme Court majority chose to allow New London, Connecticut to take 115 properties from private citizens and sell them with compensation, but then to sell them to other private entities for development rather than as public use, as typically had been interpreted. The Fifth Amendment had been interpreted, and I disagree with the majority, but you seem to not disagree with them.
Well, the whole issue turns on the definition of public purpose, because the government, whatever entity it is, whether it's a state, county, city, federal, can take property with due compensation.
Right.
If it's for a public purpose. Now, we usually think of that as highways and parks and
isn't the
government
property
buildings.
Isn't the, pardon me for mincing words with you, sir, but isn't the proper term use, public use?
Well, public use has been defined as a public purpose.
Okay.
And that was the definition, I believe, that the court used to base its decision, because it happens all across the country, particularly in cities where the inner core has deteriorated over the years, and it becomes not only a low tax base, sometimes a no tax base, but it breeds crime and all sorts of bad things. And the only way they can do anything about that is to condemn it and develop it. And governments are notoriously bad at developing property, so they turn it over to private developers who do this, and the public purpose or the public use is the redevelopment area.
But in the case of New London, this is not blighted. The homeowners that are being displaced that I know about, it's not blighted country area, and there's at least a handful of small businesses that are being displaced.
Well, this happens too. I don't know the exquisite facts in that case, but I do know that the public use is basis for the condemnation, so to speak, of
right.
the
That's
of
right.
the property. And the court found that the definition fit what the public use was in that particular case.
It seems to me that the issue is how we're defining public use or public purpose. And for a long time, since the founding of this country, the definition of the takings clause, the interpretation of the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment had been for public use, like a railroad or a highway. But
right.
now, it's in the last 100 years or so, at least according to Justice Stevens, that's being interpreted more, as you say, for public purpose, not so much just for public use. And I think that's where we're stuck, at least that's where I'm stuck. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back just a little bit more on this, and then we're going to get into how to establish a successful practice with Judge William Huss. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend Judge William Huss. And his book, which he wrote along with his lovely wife, Dr. Marlene Coleman, Working with Your Homeowners Association. You know, this is an important, this topic we're talking about, Judge Huss, is, you know, fits perfectly with your book, Working with Homeowners Associations, because, you know, it's possible that a homeowners, that a community governed by a homeowners association could become condemned by a municipality.
And they have. And this has happened in places particularly where there's a need for expanding a marina or a harbor, and there's an association which is a marina there. That has happened here. And so it does happen, and it's going to happen to anyone who owns private property, and that private property is needed for a public purpose or a public use.
But, you know, Judge, you said a minute ago that governments, city governments, are notorious for being poor developers. They're also notorious for being poor business, making poor business decisions. I mean, a book could be written that would curl everyone's hair and make you ill to see some of the decisions that they make. And these are the people that private homeowners are left to the mercies of these kinds of decision makers. And that's the reason why I think that we should err on the side of the property owner, not err on the side of a decision that you know, that some of these commissioners, council members, and mayors make. Anyway, that you and I will be debating this for a long time. There's going to be a lot more to come, but I still want you on the federal bench. I still want you on the Supreme Court, Judge Huss. Let's move over and talk about how to establish a successful professional practice. Where do we start?
Well, we start with the notion that a professional practice, whether it's a legal practice, a medical practice, a dental practice, or an accounting practice, architecture, or
consultant,
an insurance agency, any of these professional practices are in fact small businesses.
That's right.
And a law practice, for example, is a small business. It just happens that the business person is a lawyer, or the same thing is true of a dentist or an accountant or a doctor. So that's the premise of the series, and there will be four books, and I'm writing the first one now, Start Your Own Law Practice, and then I will co-author the other three, medical, dental, and accounting. And that's the premise.
All right, and when's the first one going to be out?
In the fall.
In this
probably
fall, okay.
In November.
That's right. You said that earlier.
Yes.
Okay, so in general, what would be your advice to anyone setting up a practice to begin with? I know some young dentists who've just opened up a practice. What would your advice to them be?
Well, the first thing you want to do when you get the idea to set up a practice, or any kind of business for that matter, but we're talking about a professional practice. The first thing I did when I set my firm up when I was a lawyer, I engaged an accountant. And that's the first thing I think you need to do, is to get the advice from someone who really can help you to set up your your accounting system, your bookkeeping system, give you the advice you need on setting up withholding accounts and all of those government things that have to be done. And you need that expertise. If you try to read it out of a book or learn it yourself, you're going to spend more time on that than running your business.
But now, what if you're an accountant? Who do you call?
Well, that's a good question. The second person that you want to contact developing your practice is a realtor. You want to find out where you want to be located.
Yeah.
And they're the best people to give you the advice. If I were an accountant, that's the first person I would contact. And I would find the area where I want to practice and give the amount that I want to pay for rent, turn that over to a realtor and say, find a space for me,
mm-hmm.
and let the expert do the expert's job.
You think that sometimes professionals get the idea that because they're really smart in one thing that they're really smart in everything?
Oh, I think this is true, and I think it's true particularly of lawyers.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Who would have thought that?
But you know,
just kidding, lawyers.
Well, since I still am an active license, although I do full time mediation.
Oh yeah, you're very active in your mediation practice, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and sometimes that arbitration is thrown in now and then.
Right.
But, I think there's an old maxim which may or may not be true. That lawyers and doctors are terrible business people.
Right.
And quite often this is true because they focus on an area that is very, very narrow, and you have to be a little bit broader if you're going to be in business.
My favorite old maxim, Judge Huss, is a lawyer who has himself for a client has a fool for a lawyer who represents himself has a fool for a client or something like that.
That's right, exactly.
And so that could be extended to a lot of folks. You know, when I had a consulting business, I would often go see my clients and have them consult with me about my own business.
Exactly.
Because you can't see your own world like they can you?
Exactly, and then another example of that is a friend of mine and I are setting up a distribution business for a sugar substitute, and the first thing I did was to go out and get a lawyer to draw up the agreement.
Right. When we come back, though, we're going to go inside the four walls of this practice and talk a little bit more about how to set the practice up inside the four walls, some of the details, some of the specifics, some of the fundamentals with our good friend Judge William Huss right after these messages. It's 10 till. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a good visit with our good friend, Judge William Huss, former Los Angeles County Superior Court judge, the co-author of Working with Your Homeowners Association. Judge, tell us where your book's available, please.
In all the major bookstores on Amazon.com. As a matter of fact, Amazon gives you a nice discount.
Good. Good deal. And folks, you can also find the book on our site. We can, if you want to read more about it, if you're on our site, you can go to Bill's position in our website, in our Brain Trust, and click on the resources link, and it'll take you to a photo of Bill's book, a little example, a little summary of it, and then it'll link you right over to Amazon.
I just want to remind everybody that a homeowners association is a small business.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Because it's got a budget and
well.
Bill, let's get inside the four walls of this professional operation that we're talking about starting up.
All right.
When you started your law practice, those few years ago that it was, what was the first thing that happened where you said, "Wow, I didn't see that coming. I wish I'd known more about that."
Well, I think probably the most frightening thing about starting a business is the fear of being alone, and I know I was with a large law firm that broke up, and I saw the opportunity to go out on my own, and I took that opportunity, but I tried first to interest other people into going into partnership with me,
mm-hmm.
and they were interested in going their own way and not doing that, and I felt very much alone, and I had to get used to that very quickly, and I thought to myself, well, people have been doing it for a long time.
Right.
No reason why I can't do it. And so that's the first thing I did was to get an accountant, find out where I wanted to be located, and the key to any professional practice is having clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Customers. You got to have customers. Right. So you found, you surrounded yourself with a group of supporters, basically, didn't you?
Well, that's very difficult to come by if you don't have capital.
Right.
So that's the next thing you want to do after you have the location where you want to be, whether it's in a small town or a medium-sized city or a big metropolitan area.
Or downtown or in your home.
That's right. And it's a very interesting phenomenon that's occurring now, particularly among lawyers, and that is having their practices at home.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many advantages for that, particularly for women who want to raise a family.
Right.
And I think it's something like 37% of the new jobs are now telecommunicating.
That's right.
And that's a lot of people. And IBM, as a matter of fact, is benefiting from that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Among their employees.
A lot of their people do work from home. That's true.
They're right. It's telecommunicating, and it's mm-hmm. just wonderful. But with a small professional practice, the first thing is to decide how you want to structure it. Do you want to be a sole practitioner? Do you want to go into partnership with one or two people? How do you want to do that? And these are decisions that you have to make that satisfy you. And once you do that, then you get the accounting, the banking, and the real estate issues all lined up. And that's very, very time-consuming when you should be working on other things. And so you want to get them out of the way early.
It would also seem to me that, you know, when you first started your practice, technology was part of your practice, but it wasn't as involved as it is today, was it?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, the IBM Selectric was the was the technology of the day.
The typewriter, of course.
Exactly. And I never will forget, I had a woman as a secretary who could take shorthand like a genius and type like a genius. And then I had to upgrade everything into word processors.
Right.
And she would not make the transition. And she told me, "Mr. Huss, I'm not a machine. I'm a keyboard artist." And so she finally had to leave because she would not make the transition.
But today, with the technology, the good thing about a practice, a professional practice, is you can be successful with a lot fewer people if you leverage the
right.
technology correctly, can't you?
Exactly, exactly. And a lot of the legal work is done by the lawyer on the keyboard.
Right.
Particularly in drafting documents. The legal profession itself is divided into two basic areas, the litigation side and the transactional side.
Mm-hmm.
And either side is benefited by technology. And the lawyers can do a great deal of the work themselves. And although there's always a need for assistance, and legal secretaries now are called legal assistants quite
right.
often.
Judge Huss, I've got to wrap it up. Thank you for being here. We're looking forward to the next time, and especially when you launch your book. Thank you for a good job today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
Judge William Huss, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.